Welcome to Brighttown Broadcast News for Tuesday, June 6th, 2023. Mike Adams here. Thank you for joining me. I actually did record today's episode in the studio, and I will be bringing you an interview from that studio recording coming up. But an urgent issue, breaking news issue, came onto my radar. I made some phone calls. I talked to John Moore, the Liberty Man. And I'll be bringing you right now here a special emergency report about World War III that is taking precedence over the other stuff I recorded, frankly. I'm just ditching the other stuff right now, focusing on this. So you need to hear this. This is critical information from John Moore, the Liberty Man. And we'll do the special report right here. And then I will rejoin you on the other side, cover some news, and then we'll bring you the studio interview, which is with Dr. Brian Hooker and another person, Natalie Sadie, from Children's Health Defense. So that's coming up later in today's show. But first, the special report featuring information from John Moore. All right, Mike Adams, guarding World War III. This is being recorded Monday evening, June 5th, 2023. I just got off the phone with the Liberty Man, John Moore, who I will have as a guest later this week. That interview will air on Friday. John Moore has told me the following and asked that I share it with you. And I agree that it's critical, urgent information to get out to you. Now, just as background, John Moore, known as the Liberty Man, I've interviewed him several times. He's a firearms instructor, former detective, police force detective in Missouri. In fact, he lives in the Ozarks, which is one of the best prepper areas in the country, by the way. John Moore has a lot of high-level military contacts. And I know some are in the Navy. I don't know who else outside of that. And he protects his contacts, just to be clear. And he hasn't shared them with me because, you know, he understands operational security. But I have my own contacts, former military, special forces, former military intelligence, you name it. You know, a lot of people, retired FBI, even folks like that. And over the last several weeks, they've been kind of trying to bend my ear on some points about escalation into World War III. And I took that information as just, okay, well, those are data points on a plot. I don't know if the data points connect. I don't know if it's a cohesive picture yet. But when I spoke with John Moore today, it filled in the gaps. And now the picture is quite clear. And that's what I'm going to share with you. And the upshot is that we are going to find ourselves in World War III before the end of this calendar year. And John Moore's contacts have told him the following information, which is also found on John Moore's radio show, which is, by the way, he posts that at Brighttown.com. So if you want to go to Brighttown.com/channels/TheLibertyMan altogether, you're going to see all his shows every day, and you can hear him explain this himself. It's the June 5th show. But here's essentially what he has stated, that his source in the military, or former military, has said that thousands of airplanes that are currently mothballed at the Davis-Monthan Air Force Base in Tucson, Arizona, which I have driven by many times. I've seen that Air Force Base with all the A-10 Warthogs and everything mothballed there. Thousands of planes, including F-16s, are being brought out of storage there. And he says that what's actually being pulled out of storage includes C-130s, AWACS airplanes, A-10s, F-16s, everything they have. Now, I don't know if this means that this process has merely begun, and it's on schedule to happen, or if it's underway. I don't know. I don't live in Tucson, but if any of you do live in Tucson, you might drive by and just see, are the planes, you know, vanishing from the storage field there. It's a massive, I don't know how many thousands of acres that thing is, but you can see it from the road on the east side of Tucson. You know, you're just driving right by it. It's not far from the regular airport there, the Tucson airport. Well, I guess on the east side of Tucson, where the airport is more on the south. But anyway, if any of you live in Tucson, give it a drive by, see what you think. In the meantime, John Moore says that for each aircraft to be put back into service takes about 250 men and women in the military to refurbish it. They have to, you know, put fluids back in, you know, the oil, the hydraulics, everything. They have to test all the electronics. They have to replace the parts. They have to check for metal fatigue. They have to check for corrosion. They have to restart the engines, obviously. They have to check the tires, probably replace a lot of the tires because they don't necessarily weather that well in the sun, and so on and so forth, right? Check the cockpit, plexiglass, or whatever material it is they use. They got to go through the whole thing. Apparently, this process takes about $1 million. And he says it takes about 3 weeks to get this done per aircraft, but they can have multiple teams working on this, and apparently they do. And importantly, the only reason this would be done is if the United States is expecting massive military confrontation. Oh, and there's one more detail of this that's relevant. He's told, I'm just passing this along, he's told that the aircraft are being sent to the Philippines, which would imply conflict with China, and also to Europe. That's what he said publicly, is Europe. And I asked John on the phone, I said, well, what part of Europe? He said he didn't know, his source didn't tell him, but he thought logically it would be Poland. But that, again, that's not information that he's been given, so... But the Philippines is. So let's assume he's correct about Poland. That would obviously mean that these aircraft are being designated for war against Russia. Now, what we all have to understand about this is, you know how the Ukraine war has drained the United States of military supplies, ammunition, artillery rounds, aircraft, all of it? Oh, and I forgot to mention, two British national military personnel have been killed in Ukraine now. So active duty British military uniformed soldiers killed in Ukraine because the British military is already active in Ukraine. So this is already escalating into a war between the United Kingdom and Russia. But you know how this war has drained the United States of a lot of its artillery and munitions. And you know how the United States is unable to manufacture those to replace them, because, of course, of the implosion of the manufacturing base in the United States that we've talked about, you know, previously. Well, the next phase that we're about to enter into is the United States sending everything it has, everything remaining, to fight against China and Russia as World War III unfolds, leaving CONUS, the continental United States, utterly undefended and vulnerable. So many angles to cover here. So, of course, the migrant invasion of the United States across the southern border using military age CCP agents, People's Liberation Army soldiers, disguised as migrants coming across the southern border. Michael Yan has sent me videos of busloads, hundreds of thousands of People's Liberation Army soldiers are being deposited into the United States across the cities on purpose by Traitor Mayorkas and Joe Biden and the Democrats who are all working with the CCP. So imagine that all these military agents are flowing into the United States. They're being pre-positioned near critical infrastructure, refineries, you know, power substations, bridges, whatever, police stations, you name it, ports, and military bases. And then at the same time, the U.S. is going to be sending out everything that's left. Every last airplane, every last Humvee, every last soldier, every pilot. Oh, and I asked John Moore, where are they going to get the pilots to fly all these airplanes? And he said, well, about half of the commercial air pilots are retired military pilots, and they're just going to reactivate them by declaring a national state of war. So they're going to take the pilots away from commercial airlines, which will have all sorts of implications for the the economy and the collapse of air transportation, by the way. You know, good luck getting air deliveries of anything. And they're going to put them in these, you know, you're going to mandate that they fly these refurbished F-16s and A-10s and everything against China and Russia. But the heartland, America, will be undefended so that the activation day of the pre-positioned Chinese military personnel, they will not be stopped easily. It will come down to, frankly, it's going to come down to America's armed citizens and militia groups, which frankly was the whole purpose of the Second Amendment militia, by the way, was to help defend the American people against tyrants and invaders, right? So the militia groups are going to be at war with the communist Chinese that's occupying America, while the U.S. military will be getting eaten up fighting Russia and China out of countries like the Philippines and Taiwan and maybe Japan. And of course, Ukraine as a proxy staging area for war against Russia. Now, what else is critical to understand is that the city of Bakhmut fell recently. That was, in many people's view, Ukraine's last stand against Russia. Now, I know technically it's not the very last stand, but it was propped up by Zelensky as the most important city to defend. And he said, we're going to throw everything at it. We will not let Bakhmut fall. Well, Bakhmut has fallen. Russia holds all of it. And there was an attempted counteroffensive by Ukraine in the last 2 days that utterly failed and reportedly resulted in the killing of 2,000 Ukrainian soldiers and something like 10 main battle tanks and who knows how many other vehicles and so on. Ukraine's ability to halt Russia's advance is just about over. And so this brings me to some of the other, I don't know, rumors slash intel, whatever you want to call it, from other sources who told me in the last 10 days or so that Ukraine is just about to pull out of this war. And let me explain what I mean by that. Not that they will just surrender to Russia, but that they're just done. They just don't have anything else to fight with. And in fact, a lot of the units in Ukraine are turning against their commanders because they don't want to be sent on suicide missions. And so we're rapidly approaching the point, it seems, where Zelensky is done and his delay effort against Russia is just burned out. And there's nothing more that Zelensky can do. Like, it doesn't matter how many more weapons are sent to Ukraine. Ukraine has just run out of an effective fighting force. And you just don't have the men any longer to keep this up. When that point is reached, NATO is going to just march right into Ukraine and then pick up the fight with Russia. And that day is coming very, very soon. We're going to see Britain, of course, fighting. We're going to see the United States at war directly with Russia. We're going to see Biden declaring an emergency and a state of war, even bypassing Congress if necessary. Then we're going to see China get involved. And this is when we're likely to see China halting exports to the United States to cause an economic implosion in the United States, while at the same time, the CCP-controlled Biden regime declares a state of emergency and attempts a nationwide Second Amendment confiscation in order to leave America defenseless against the Chinese invasion that I already mentioned earlier, actually a pre-positioned invasion. We're going to see regional civil war being set off across America. We're going to see an economic implosion, the halt of exports out of China. We're going to see a banking failure, a financial collapse, probably false flag, power grid, sabotage by the government, to be blamed on right-wingers, by the way. We're going to see World War III escalating with Russia. And on top of that, guess what else we're likely to see? The minute the U.S. begins to engage Russia in Ukraine, guess what we're going to see? Russia launching tactical nuclear weapons at key military targets in Europe. And that may escalate into ICBMs targeting American cities, such as Washington, D.C., or American military bases. Now, if you think about it, if Russia and China are working together, it's actually kind of the perfect 1-2 punch from their point of view to have Russia nuke military bases in America and then have China activate the occupying soldiers to take over the country from within, and to literally have Chinese soldiers go in and just execute all the governors, all the mayors, all the city council members, all the police, like all the military base commanders that they can find. You know, the CCP soldiers will just run around and execute all the apparent authority leaders. This is basically Red Dawn. Okay, it's like Red Dawn movie. The first one, the good one with Patrick Swayze, except it's China in this case. And then it's going to come down to armed citizens to be able to defend their nation against this invasion. So I probably don't have to tell you, because you're well informed, that this means the collapse of the dollar. This means the collapse of the Western financial system. This means the collapse of readily available consumer goods, the collapse of the availability of fuel, food, transportation, you know, all of it. We're about to go into a wartime scenario that is off the charts, insane. And I've interviewed people like Steve Quayle, and I've also had private conversations with Steve Quayle, who's warned me repeatedly that this is exactly where it's going. And his sources are telling him the same thing. There's a lot of intel being passed around in military circles that is pointing in this direction. And by the way, don't forget about those leaked military plans from that whistleblower who has since been charged, that showed a counteroffensive attempt. And that, those leaked military plans, whatever was being planned, has already failed. It's failed. And so the West is moving into desperation mode now. And frankly, the fall of Bakhmut is one of the trigger points of all of this. Desperation is kicking in. And when globalist nations like the U.S. empire, when it becomes desperate, it does crazy, insane, desperate things, such as potentially launching a false flag nuclear event in Ukraine to blame Russia in order to justify its own use of military weapons against Russia. It's very easy to see how this escalates quickly into a nuclear event. And again, based on John Moore's estimated timeline here, we may have about 6 months before World War III is underway. And that might be a generous estimate. It might be a lot less than that. You know, it might be before Halloween, or who knows? I mean, often these things take longer to happen than what we think. But it's clear that Ukraine is running out of an effective fighting force. It's clear that Russia is gaining ground. It's clear that NATO is increasingly desperate. And it's clear that we need to be ready for this. We need to be ready in every way possible. So I'll bring you more information about this as I have it. Remember, I'm interviewing John Moore, the Liberty Man, this week. That interview will air on Friday, late morning, on Brighteon.com. It'll be part of Brighteon Broadcast News. And I'll ask him more questions at that time, see if he has any more intel. But bottom line, prepare for World War III. Prepare for nuclear events. Prepare for the United States to be attacked from within, a total communist invasion and takeover attempt. Prepare for your local, you know, governor, your senators, your members of Congress to all be placed on communist kill lists. Some of those communists might be left-wing Americans, by the way, who are cooperating with China to carry out executions and kill lists. I mean, we're talking about a communist purge day, and they're going to go after all the senators, all the governors, anybody who's not signed up as a communist. So, you know, Senator Ted Cruz, we pray for your safety. Alert your staff to this, the possibility of this threat. I mean, you'll be safe in Texas, surrounded by all of us Second Amendment supporters, but, you know, we need to pray for the safety of those true Americans. There are good senators. There are good members of the House. There are good people inside every organization who we need to help protect, just to be clear. You know, there are good sheriffs, obviously. There are lots of upstanding veterans and active duty military, and you know, we the people, we're going to have to work together with all our fellow Americans if this day, if this purge day unfolds. We're going to be in the middle of an attempted communist revolution. on our own soil. And so we need to be ready for that because, well, you know, the media is all in with the communists. Our government at the federal level is all in with the communists. Big tech is all in with the communists. You know, every institution has already sold out America, including the DOJ and the FBI and the ATF and so on. So prepare for an actual end of days battle for the defense of America, to defend the Republic against foreign invaders, probably involving nuclear strikes on U.S. targets as well to soften things up. So prepare for that scenario, and I'll have more updates for you later on as I get more information. So thank you for listening. Mike Adams here, the Health Ranger, naturalnews.com, and also brighttown.com. Check out my Brighttown broadcast news each day on my channel, HR Report. Thank you for listening, and God bless America. Take care. All right, there's some sobering information for you there. That was a special report. Now we're going to continue with some additional headlines. But you know, the fact that World War III is now apparently so close just underscores the urgency of getting ourselves prepared in every possible way. And you know, I've been looking a lot, focus a lot on the financial side of things, like how do we prepare ourselves in terms of our assets and finances. I mean, I know these globalists are going to crash the Western financial system and pull off a great rug pull on all of us, you know, a great reset where people are going to lose the value of almost everything that they keep in fiat currency. And as you know, I've kept you abreast of this. I've been looking diligently into various cryptocurrencies, decentralized finance, privacy coins, all these kinds of things. And I have a pretty exciting announcement to share with you tonight. Maybe surprising, a little bit of a shakeup of things, but I talked to my devs last night, and the very first cryptocurrency that we are going to support on Brighttown as the tipping system is actually going to be Monero. And we're building that in right now. Monero is a privacy coin that's it's been around quite a while. It's, you know, well positioned. It's not perfect. It has some drawbacks. There was a bug that was found in its blockchain. It doesn't use the Mimblewimble blockchain, which I think is superior. Nevertheless, Monero is very functional. I've used it before to purchase VPN services. I do hold some Monero, by the way, just to be clear. I hold a lot of different crypto right now, as I've always repeatedly disclosed here. And I'm not encouraging you to go out and buy Monero. In fact, what I'm saying is that you'll be able to receive tips in Monero on brighttown.com as soon as we deploy it. And we do intend to deploy some other cryptos as well. And, you know, I'll try to keep you informed about that. You know, but I don't know if you ever knew this about Monero. You know, a lot of the cryptocurrencies have a very fascinating and sometimes pretty dark, twisted history. You know, all the dark shadow side of humanity that you see in government or in banking or in, I don't know, in academia or science or whatever, you know, that same dark shadow side comes out in the cryptocurrency world. So in crypto projects, you know, there's a lot of drama. There's a lot of personality conflicts. Some crazy people too, you know, like truly just off their rocker, crazy, you know, batshit crazy, as we say, complete bonkers. There's also a lot of scammers and schemers and liars, pathological liars. And what I had learned recently is that the history of the Monero coin, you know, it started out by a founder. I don't know who that is. I literally don't know this person's name, but that apparently the other people involved in the Monero project, they were unhappy with something that the founder was doing. Okay. I don't know the details of this. And then they ended up making a community decision that they could not live with that founder of Monero. And they decided to fork the project, which means to split off the blockchain to essentially, you know, well, a whole new blockchain, but using a lot of the old open source code. And so that fork, and by the way, Bitcoin has forked several times. A lot of projects have forked. That new fork became known as the Monero that you know today, which is XMR. And I found that fascinating because I understood that this community of people realized that their founder, who they said was crazy or dishonest or unethical or whatever, they said that they didn't want to have that toxicity in their project, and so they split off from that person. At least this is my understanding of it. If I'm wrong, go ahead and correct me in the comments, but this is my understanding. And so they created their own new project, which to me makes a lot of sense, actually. You know, if you're involved in a cryptocurrency project and you find out that the founder is a pathological liar, a substance abuser, you know, a crazy person, you know, batshit crazy, suffers from substance abuse problems, extreme paranoia, is highly destructive, like a human terrorist trying to destroy the project from within. You know, if that were the case, you would be smart to fork that project and do something different. You know, do something with just the sane people still around, right? And then actually have a project that was run by people who aren't crazy. So this has happened a lot in the world of cryptocurrency, and I think it's a really healthy thing. And it makes me wonder how many other coins we know about today that have had all this drama. And I know Bitcoin has had tons of drama in its past as well. And I know that, you know, Zcash has had all kinds of drama and trauma and whatever else. And even the decision to put ordinals on the Bitcoin blockchain, you know, there's a lot of drama over that. And it comes down to the consensus governing model. What decisions are made about these projects? And are the decisions made by sane people who really have the long-term interests of the project at heart? And obviously, a lot of projects fail. There are a lot of scammers. There are a lot of rug pulls, like Sam Bankman fraud, right? So I would just say, always be cautious. Be very, very careful. And you'll notice that I never tell you to purchase a currency, right? You notice I never do that. Will never happen. I never tell you what price any currency is going to be, right? I never say it's going to go up or it's going to go down. Why? Because I'm wise enough and experienced enough to know that this space, the crypto space, is in many ways just as dirty as the fiat currency banking space or the central bank space. There's shady characters, there's bad people. There are crooks, you know, there are schemers, but there are also really amazing genius level people. There are compassionate people. There are people who care about humanity. There are people who want to make the world a better place. And I just hope, I pray that the good-hearted, ethical, moral people will win out in the end. I pray to God, because we don't have anywhere else to go in terms of digital money. You know, we need honest digital money. We need privacy features. We need a system that works, that gives us an alternative to the corrupt fiat currency banking system, right? We absolutely need that. I think it's a basic human right. It's all about basic human dignity, in fact. So I just want to encourage anybody listening, if you're involved in any project out there and you find that your founder or some key person in a position of influence in your organization is a crazy person, is destructive, or carrying out sabotage against your project, you should call them out. You should reject them. You should maybe fork your project. And if you do this and you think you have a good project that you'd like me to be aware of, please reach out to me, because I am talking to a lot of people about a lot of different projects, and I'm trying to vet the best technology. You know, I've been at this process for several months now. I'm trying to vet the best technology, the best people who are in charge. I guess in charge isn't the right word, but the stakeholders, the influencers, the people who write the code, you know, the people who are the communicators and so on. I'm seeking out the best projects that exist out there. And You know, I'm working on that process, and I am keeping you informed of what I'm finding. And I've had a lot of revelations along the way, such as what I said yesterday, that Bitcoin, it's very clear to me, Bitcoin is going to be the world reserve digital currency. And that's something I thought I would never say. And you might ask, do I hold some Bitcoin? Yeah, I do, a little bit. I don't know how much. Not a lot. Less than one Bitcoin. Let's put it that way. Okay, less than one Bitcoin. But I do think it's going to be the world reserve currency. And I think that, in fact, in the future, prices in the world will be compared to Bitcoin. I think Bitcoin, in other words, will be the stable coin. I know it sounds strange to say that, because you think about a stable coin as something tied to the dollar, right? Like Tether. But why would you want to tie a coin to a dollar when the dollar is collapsing and the fiat currency printing is going through the roof? Which means that if the dollar collapses, what happens to those stable coins that are tied to the dollar? Well, do they become worthless too at the same time? Yes, is the answer, actually. They do. And so actually, as the dollar collapses in value, as Tether then goes down in value and other stable coins tied to fiat currency, you're going to see Bitcoin, is my guess, maintain its actual purchasing power in terms of its value. And instead of talking about Bitcoin's price in dollars, people will be talking about Bitcoin in Bitcoin, and then other things represented in Bitcoin pricing, like, oh, how much does this house cost in Bitcoin? How much is this car in Bitcoin? How much is this barrel of oil in Bitcoin? And then there'll be all these other coins, privacy coins and things like that, that will be kind of supporting coins with special features, such as faster transactions or more private transactions or micropayment transactions or smart contracts that you know, do calculations and run simple code and things like that. But I've learned a lot of things in this process. I've also learned that there are no magical angels that run cryptocurrency. It's the same human beings with the same faults, with the same madness, the same greed, the same problems, the same drama, the same psychosis in some cases, the same pathological liars that exist in every other sector of society. It's just that the structure of decentralization makes it harder for cheaters to get ahead. And that's the beauty of decentralized blockchains or decentralized finance. It's the structure, it's the democratization of the system that it doesn't take away from people their evil tendencies to be insane or to be greedy or stupid. What it does is it just penalizes them for those behaviors, or ultimately makes their behavior not viable within an ecosystem that is defined by mathematics and algorithms. The sad part is a lot of smaller projects or more startup projects can be very heavily dependent on certain individuals or founders who can turn out to be, you know, batshit crazy. And then those projects are not as widely distributed as, let's say, Bitcoin or Litecoin or even Monero or whatever. And then as a result, you know, various, especially a lot of smaller projects, you've seen a lot of coins come and go, they can be wiped out overnight. So this is why I exercise caution, and I advise you to exercise caution. Don't ever buy anything just because I'm talking about it. Do your own research, you know, do your own planning. In fact, I want to help you receive tips in cryptocurrency. I want to help you receive cryptocurrency. That's my goal, is to set that up in the ecosystem that we have. And we have very large plans for this. We have plans. Well, okay, I'll just tell you one plan. I think I've kind of mentioned this before, but one of our plans is to reward people once we start setting up the tipping system, is to give away a lot of tokens to a lot of people. And so one of the things that my company has done is that we have acquired some quantity of tokens, various types of tokens and, cryptocurrency coins and so on. We've acquired some of these with the intention of giving them to people who set up those wallets in the Brighteon ecosystem. And it was one of the ways that we intended to just help kind of get people on board with the idea of using peer-to-peer digital money, was to, you know, encourage people, incentivize people, and reward people for setting up a receive address, and then we would send them some coinage. So that still is our goal. That's part of our process. That's just part of our marketing budget. You know, we spend money on this and try to help, you know, promote these ideas for financial freedom or self-determination. And we believe in that. And that's what we're committed to doing. So just wanted to keep you informed on that, and we'll see where things go. We'll see what other coins come around and what other coins qualify or resolve whatever problems they might have or obstacles or whatever. And we'll see what's ready for prime time and what isn't. And then we'll go from there. Okay, the next thing I wanted to talk about here is how the United States government, according to a whistleblower, has retrieved craft of non-human origin. Now, there's this is fascinating because a whistleblower, this is what's being claimed, is that a former intelligence official, his name is David Charles Grush, 36 years old, reported to be a decorated former combat officer in Afghanistan, and he works with the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency, the NGA, and so on. And he filed a big whistleblower report claiming that there was a cover-up, that the government actually has intact vehicles of extraterrestrial origin. He's talking about UFOs. Quote, the material includes intact and partially intact vehicles. Now, this the fact that this has gone public is not a coincidence. So you need to be suspicious that that this narrative is being pushed, and you need to ask yourself why. So I want to be clear that I believe human beings are not alone in the cosmos, right? I mean, it's a big universe, big. And there are not just billions of stars in our galaxy, but billions of galaxies, and so do the math. And once various civilizations master FTL travel, faster than light, then it becomes a then you can reach other stars within your own galaxy, especially if you can warp space. Well, I don't know, it's too much detail to go into here, but by projecting an enormous amount of energy, you can curve space, and you can cause rapid acceleration of ships through that space at multiples of the speed of light. For example, 100,000 times C, C being the speed of light. So I do believe that Earth has been, you know, on the radar of non-human intelligent species for a long time, especially since we started setting off nukes in the 1940s. But I don't buy this narrative that, oh, suddenly we're talking about how the government has intact UFOs and that this is a, you know, this is a, they're blowing the whistle to try to get this out. I think that this is actually part of a globalist plan. Now, this is just conjecture, and I can't prove it. I don't have 100% certainty of this, but I suspect that this is part of a ramping up to a narrative of what we call the cosmic false flag. And as part of the cosmic false flag narrative, the way it goes is they fake an alien invasion. And then, they fake an alien invasion. It's like, oh, mothership's in the sky. Give up all your rights, you know. Suddenly they demand everybody has to bow down to the United Nations because we need one Earth authority to speak with the alien force or whatever they're going to say. I mean, if you thought the COVID gaslighting was crazy, wait till they roll out the fake alien invasion gaslighting. And it might be convincing to a lot of people because, well, governments of the world do have some rather exotic advanced technology, and they can make images appear in the sky and things like that, just using drones at night with lights and things like that. It's not hard. to fool a lot of people when they have the media on their side and the fact checkers. You know, you might say, oh, that wasn't an alien mothership in the sky. That's nonsense. But then on Facebook, fact checkers, you know, official government sources say it was an alien mothership. Therefore, it was, you know. But it's apparent to me that they're rolling out a narrative to try to get global control over the masses and try to disarm everybody and end national sovereignty. Like, no more self-governed nations. It has to be one earth, one world government, you know, one voice, one truth, right? Which means total oppression of the truth, by the way. It means total oppression of you and I and anybody who can think for themselves. So I suspect that that's why this is coming out now. I'm not denying the fact that the U.S. government does have exotic alien, you know, artifacts and materials, all kinds of tech. In fact, I have no doubt that tech has been, well, the U.S. government has researched alien tech since the 1940s, probably, and has developed a lot of things based on that, including the transistor, which gave rise to, you know, ultimately electronics and the Internet of Things and 5G, and now the Big Brother surveillance state and AI systems, which are starting to seem pretty alien, by the way. And they want to destroy humanity for some reason. Isn't that interesting? So this all seems to be a rolling out of a narrative where the powers that be realize they're losing. They haven't achieved the global depopulation they were aiming for. They're losing the obedience of the people. You know, who has faith in governments anymore? And so in a desperate move, they're going to roll out a faked alien invasion false flag, the cosmic false flag event. And they're going to demand global obedience and the end of national sovereignty and personal liberties. Well, you can't say what you want to say. There's no free speech allowed. We're under invasion from aliens. You know, that's going to be what you're going to hear from the Biden White House. Oh, and what a convenient way to halt all future elections, by the way. There's aliens in the sky. Can't have voting. You know, something like that. That's probably where this is headed. All right, let's shift gears here and set up the interview. Got a couple of things to mention first. New at our store, healthrangerstore.com, we now have 10-pound buckets of certified organic hard red wheat berries that have a very long shelf life, and they're great for making your own bread. Again, certified organic and lab tested for all the heavy metals, and plus aflatoxins and glyphosate. This is a big deal. This is the cleanest, most heavily scrutinized and lab tested hard red wheat berries that you're going to find anywhere. Took us a while to acquire this supply. It's sealed into 2-pound packages times a quantity of 5. So inside the bucket are, you know, well sealed, vacuum sealed, rugged 2-pound packs. So that way you can just open up the pack that you need to make your bread and you're not opening up the rest of it and you won't have oxidation taking place. So it's designed for long-term storage. It's a great price. It's clean food. Check it out, healthrangerstore.com. Just search for wheat berries, and it's in a mega bucket format. And then in terms of food, a couple of our friends and sponsors, we want to plug Marjorie Wildcraft at icangrowfood.com. Remember, she teaches you how to grow food. It's worth checking out. She's got a free video on her website right there. Just register. You can watch the free webinar and learn how to grow a large amount of food in a small amount of space. And we've interviewed Marjorie many times. She's great. And then if you're looking for heirloom non-GMO seeds to grow food with, then you can check out our sponsor, arkseedkits.com. That's A-R-K, arkseedkits.com. And they've got specials. Just use discount code RANGER for savings on some of their products. Again, arkseedkits.com. Get yourself squared away with your food supply based on what's coming. This is going to matter. All right. One other story. There's a dam that has been destroyed in Kherson, if that's how you, or Kherson, however you pronounce it. I'm sorry, in Ukraine. This dam is called the Nova Kakhovka Dam. There we go. Nova Kakhovka. This dam has reportedly been destroyed, and it's going to cause severe flooding to the east, it looks like. Yeah, if I'm understanding the map correctly, it's going to cause a lot of flooding. And I don't know who destroyed it. Perhaps it's Russia, perhaps it's Ukraine, perhaps it's NATO. Looks like the water is destroying villages in its path and farmland and much more. So this could be an act of terrorism, could be an act of war. It's not clear yet, but I just wanted to tell you that that dam, the Nova Kakhovka, dam, apparently, reportedly, has been destroyed. It is very sad for the residents there that war brings such suffering and misery to the people in the region. Very sad. Okay, we're going to have to shift gears into the interview here. This is an interview with Dr. Brian Hooker, who is a science advisor with Children's Health Defense, and also with Natalie Sadie, who is a, I forgot her exact title. She's a leader. Well, she'll tell you her exact title with Children's Health Defense California, the California branch. And enjoy this interview. I enjoyed doing it. I think you'll learn a lot. And that's going to be a wrap for today's podcast. And we'll have more for you tomorrow. Don't forget, tomorrow is the, is it tomorrow? No. Wednesday is the water filter test results for cesium removal. So yeah, I guess that is tomorrow. Come to think of it. Oh, the days are all running together. But enjoy this interview, and we'll have more for you tomorrow. Welcome to today's interview on Brighteon.com. I'm Mike Adams, the founder of Brighteon, and today we're joined by two very special people from CHD, Children's Health Defense, which has done extraordinary work in the nonprofit space to try to raise awareness about, personal health safety, liberty, the right to say no to experimental jabs, among other things. And we're joined today by Dr. Brian Hooker, who is now working with CHD, and also Natalie Sadie, who is the head of CHD California, the new chapter that's just recently been launched in California. Welcome to the show, both of you. It's an honor to have you on, and thank you for the work that you're doing for the world. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much.
Oh, you said very that simultaneously. Yeah.
Yes.
Great minds think alike. And can I just say really quickly, I'm not the head of the new California chapter. I'm on the leadership team. I just don't want to step on any toes.
Oh, okay. My apologies. Okay, you're on the leadership council for the new chapter of CHD California. Got that. My mistake. This is the first time that we've met. So you'll have to fill in a few details for me here. But let's start with the fact that CHD California has launched a new chapter. You want to go ahead and tell us about that, Natalie?
Yeah, so the old chapter closed down and we relaunched the day after, and we just wanted to get back to the grassroots of what Bobby Kennedy's vision was when he started Children's Health Defense 13 years ago. And so we are completely volunteer-based. Our leadership board is made up of a whole range of different people. We've got professionals, we've got stay-at-home mums, we've got doctors, we've got all sorts of people that are pulling together to really create an incredible community so that we can bring things to the wider community. And we'll get into some of the things that we're doing. And then we also brought in an incredible advisory council, and Dr. Brian Hooker is one of the people that is on that board. We have Dr. Peter McCullough, who we know has been an incredible voice through the last few years, and has also published a book, The Courage to Face COVID-19. We have attorney Michael Baum, who is responsible for the massive win against Monsanto and Roundup that we all know about, and was responsible for the release of the Monsanto papers. We have Pastor Rob McCoy, who did not shut down during COVID at all. And he was fighting for freedom of speech, freedom of religion, and just our freedom in general, and creating a safe haven for people to congregate. We have author John Leake, who is the co-author of The Courage to Face COVID-19. And I know I'm missing somebody. We have Toby Rogers, PhD, and his thesis was The Political Economy of Autism. Excuse me for reading, but I didn't want to mess up what incredible work he has done. So we have brought this incredible team together so that we can go out into the community and really do great things and bring the community together.
Well, that's extraordinary. Thank you for that introduction. And I think that in the minds of most of our viewers, what CHD has already accomplished is rather extraordinary. And the work of Robert F. Kennedy Jr., you know, as the author of the book on Fauci and so many other things, has also been extraordinary. We've been covering CHD since before it was called CHD, you know, the World Mercury Project and all the concerns about mercury in the environment and protecting the health and health freedom of children. So thank you for all that you're doing. I want to bring in Dr. Brian Hooker next. So Dr. Hooker, your role is as a science advisor with CHD, correct? Can you tell us what is your focus right now? What are you looking at the most closely?
Well, in California, one of the biggest efforts is to educate the public regarding the draconian bills that go through the legislature. You know, we have had this fight, and I've been involved in this fight in California. I'm a California resident myself, and so this directly affects me. So when I was asked to be a part of their advisory board, I was just tickled pink to be able to do that. But much of what we do is educational, not only to oppose the bad bills that are in front of the current legislature, but also to look at some of the past legislation. You know, California is the one that brought you SB 277 and then right. SB 276, which was 277 on steroids. And so, you know, we've been fighting this battle and we want to show the harm and damage that is being caused by, you know, these unneeded, unnecessary jabs. And, you know, I think that COVID-19 has really brought that into the forefront of people's minds because, you know, for the first time we have population-wide vaccination in a very, very coercive fashion. And so getting the science out there to show the differences between vaccinated and unvaccinated children, vaccinated and unvaccinated adults, I think is really, really compulsory. And again, California is so near and dear to my heart. I grew up in Los Angeles. I now live in the North State in Redding, California. And we want to make sure that we can make as big of an impact as possible and educate as many people as possible so we can prevent this type of legislation from just really taking over our state.
The website, folks, is ca.childrenshealthdefense.org. I've got it up on my screen to show you the California chapter there. And you see some of the issues here. California Public School Alternatives, right? Call to action, AB 659, HPV bill, and so on. Natalie, my question to you is, are you now in the post-COVID era, are you seeing a lot more, I would say moms, but maybe parents as a whole, coming out and expressing concern about the vaccine mandates in the public school system? Are you seeing a stronger trend towards homeschooling or even naturopathic medicine? Or what are you seeing?
For me personally, I think the last few years has really woken a lot of people up to the fact that there is something going on now, that there is a belief that health comes through the tip of a needle. And that's not necessarily true. Humanity has survived for so very long. And most of that time, we were using natural remedies and food and what have you. And obviously, sanitation played a huge part in extending the lifespan of people. And I think these forced vaccinations for COVID has really made a lot of people stop and go, hang on, is there more to this? So there certainly has been an awakening and people searching for more information. And there's a whole range of books that people can read, Turtles All the Way Down, which Mary Holland is responsible for having translated and bringing to publication, which is a phenomenal book in terms of education. I've spoken to doctors that said that book changed their perspective on the whole vaccination ideology. So there are certainly more people looking for information, and there are people that have also woken up to what's going on in the schooling system. So they certainly are looking for alternatives, and maybe they don't have those answers yet, but they're certainly looking.
Well, that is really exciting to hear that there are more people looking and that CHD is providing a lot of answers. I think the role of your organization is critical in society. And I want to bring attention also to your national chapter here, just childrenshealthdefense.org. My organization is a supporter and a donor to CHD. So, you know, national issues here. But California seems to be the place where a lot of these medical experiments, in my opinion, are first tried out or they're pushed onto children. It seems to me that children in California are on the front lines, the most vulnerable to the most wicked attempts by the industry or the establishment to take away health freedom and fertility and longevity from children. Would you agree or disagree with that assessment?
I would agree with that assessment. I think that really California is the tip of the spear. And, you know, there are certain nuances within our legislature that make it easier for some of these draconian bills to pass. There has been the health freedom movement has had a difficult time in California. And, you know, one of the things that I've avoided, and, you know, I've heard many, many times, and now we've got people leaving the state in droves. You know, it's one of the states in the United States where the population is actually decreasing and we're seeing contraction. And we don't really want to have that. California is my home and has been my home. And, you know, I don't want to see these draconian bills passed. I don't want to see it be the hotbed of medical experimentation, especially at the hands of our children. I have a vaccine injured child who's now an adult, you know, myself or himself. And I would not wish that onto any parent, onto any family. And so, you know, it's been, as Natalie said, it's been very encouraging to see individuals start to wake up. My focus has been more on practitioners and more on individuals who have sort of been enlightened during the COVID-19 era, but to bring them back. You know, I've been doing this for about 20 years, and to hearken them back to, you know, the era when we started having these mandates, the era when thimerosal was at a heightened level in vaccinations in the early 2000s, and the cataclysm that actually caused in terms of the ever increasing autism rates. And many of them are really, really starting to wake up and starting to challenge the paradigm and ask questions around the whole issue regarding cradle to grave vaccination.
Right. Huge point. And in fact, I wanted to mention, and the question will be directed to Natalie here, but, you know, Brian, you and I've known of you. I think I interviewed you many years ago, but I've known of your work for at least a decade, if not longer. You and I have been among those who were, I would say, blazing the trail in many ways. And, you know, Dr. Wakefield and others, Andy, who has done extraordinary work in this space, blazing the trail of public awareness of this. And then with COVID, the COVID vaccine issue has now awakened a huge number of people to the issues that we had been warning about for a great number of years. Well, actually, let me direct back to you, Brian. Do you have a response to that? Do you feel in some way vindicated for some of your early warnings that now people are realizing were in fact accurate?
I certainly do. And I think it's a very, very good time and a very, very sort of poignant time for the health freedom movement, because a lot of individuals are starting to wake up. When you look at the national statistics, just under 70% of the United States got the first one or more COVID-19 vaccine. So that's 30% that didn't. And now when you look at this sort of never-ending litany of boosters that are being foisted on children as young as 6 months of age, so many parents are opting out. And when they're opting out, they're asking their practitioners, and then they're asking other individuals like advocates like ourselves, You know, what do you think about the vaccination schedule? So I am very, very encouraged. And I think it's important to use the word vindicated. I do feel vindicated for all these years of effort, all these years of persecution. And, you know, that Mike, you and I have both endured. And it really warms my heart. And I feel like we're saving children.
You clearly are. You are saving children. Children's Health Defense is saving children. There are no doubt there are young adults alive today because of your work, Dr. Hooker. No question in my mind. Now, Natalie, this is the first time we've met, so I don't know your background, but could you share with our audience what brought you to this leadership role with CHD in California? Why are you so passionate about this topic?
First of all, I think one of the things that makes me so passionate is just freedom of choice. We should be able to choose what we are doing to our bodies. Our bodies don't belong to the state, to any particular country, or, you know, we hear the slogan and we heard it all through 2020, 2021, and 22, my body, my choice. And apparently that argument is valid for one particular cause, but not another. And I just so strongly disagree with the fact that people think that we shouldn't have a choice over all of that. My background is nothing like Brian's in terms of being in the medical industry. I worked in entertainment back in Australia. I've done television work. I've modeled full time. I came over to the US and was really trying to establish a hosting career and modeling. And I was doing all of that. And then the world shut down. And so I sat around like everybody else. Actually, I didn't sit. I kept moving. I was outside all day, every day, because I refused to sit inside and just watch the TV because something felt so off about the directives we were being given. I understand staying safe and hygiene and all of those things, but so much of what we were being told didn't make sense. In the middle of 2020, I got a phone call from some journalists in Australia and they said, "We want to work with you." And I said, "I don't have a journalism background." And they said, "That's fine, we'll teach you." And it turns out I have a knack for investigative journalism. So my first stories that I did with that organization, and I'm no longer with them, but we're on hydroxychloroquine, and that was sort of before anybody was talking about it. And I was covering the fact that obesity was one of the major comorbidities for people that were dying because of COVID. And my question was, and nobody ever answered it at the time. Since then, I've had an answer, but why aren't we talking about it? Instead of telling people to stay home, watch TV and don't move, we're telling them to get fatter because while they're sitting there, they're watching fast food ads and all of these things.
Crazy.
Which is, it's just crazy. And I said, why aren't we telling them to get up and go outside, vitamin D, fresh air, keep moving. And while you have the time, while your workplace is shut down, if you don't know how to cook, learn. This is a time to get together with the family and make really healthy meals and do things that can improve your health. So that was sort of the beginning of it. And then I interviewed Del Bigtree. I interviewed Robert F. Kennedy Jr. And it kind of just snowballed from there. And I'm a huge advocate for freedom.
Well, now in your home country of Australia, then New South Wales in particular was known throughout the pandemic for the most draconian, seemingly anti-human rights demands of its citizens, the forced quarantine camps, the forced masking, social distancing, the attacks on anyone. Somehow, the Australian government became perhaps arguably the most vicious in the world, even more vicious than the U.S. government. Yeah, go ahead.
Absolutely. What I was going to say was all of Australia was just insane with what they did. And the irony is I had just come back from Australia in January of 2020. Then we obviously shut down first here in California. And so people were calling me saying, "You've got to come back." And my gut just told me, stay put. I have a dog. I have a house. I'm just staying where I am. And I said to them, whatever we have is coming to you 6 months later. And 6 months later, their lockdowns were beyond insane, but it was actually Victoria that was more brutal than any other state. And it's from Victoria where there were the massive protests that were making, well, headlines with the independent reporters, not so much on mainstream media, but they were they were peaceful protests. Nothing was being burned down. There wasn't looting. There wasn't anything. People were just saying, we are not going to be locked down. They were fighting for their unions to stand up for them. And police were firing rubber bullets, tear gas, all sorts of things on people that were not violent. And that is something we have never seen in Australia before. And it was heartbreaking to watch.
That's why, you know, Children's Health Defense, the name emphasizes the focus of health and protecting children. But it's really, the mission, I would say, is much more broad. It's human rights defense. You know, it just starts with children, but it's about all of human rights. And back to you, Brian, wouldn't you say that what you're finding in your research is, in fact, a violation? I mean, I don't mean to put words in your mouth, so you can correct me if I'm stating this incorrectly, but this the aggressiveness of the experimental medicine on adults and senior citizens and children it's an assault on human rights and human dignity, is it not?
I couldn't have said it better, Mike. I really feel like, you know, the Nuremberg Code was just trampled on, you know, mercilessly. It's not like the medical authorities and public health authorities have had any respect for the Nuremberg Code before COVID-19, but it just got so much worse. And you see the hospital protocols that were basically designed to kill people. I mean, I think we need to address that. We need to Yes. come out and say that individuals that were put on ventilators, that were put on remdesivir, which is a drug that basically destroys your internal organs. And then, you know, basically as this sort of standard protocol, as the standard of care from on high, from Anthony Fauci himself, and to see the death and carnage, to see the all-cause mortality and the mortality due to COVID-19 in the real big push, that would be March, April, and May of 2020 when the ventilator deaths were really occurring. You know, it was absolutely insane and, you know, and criminal. I mean, we have to say that, you know, we have seen our federal government in collusion to commit murder. And, you know, this goes beyond just the ventilators. We've looked at the incidence of myocarditis and pericarditis from the COVID-19 shot. And I recently published a paper with my associate, Carl Jablonowski, that showed that the CDC, back when the vaccination rate in the United States for COVID-19 was 8%, CDC knew clearly that there was a signal for myocarditis and pericarditis, but yes. They chose to bury the information for at least 3 months. And during those 3 months, the vaccination rate in the United States went from 8% to 50%. And so all of these lives that have been harmed, that have been irreparably damaged, myocarditis is not minor. It is not basic. It is a cardiac event that you're going to live for the rest of your life, which could curtail your life as well. But yet we have these federal agencies covering them up in a very, very criminal, colluded way.
Yeah, isn't that extraordinary that the deliberate withholding of certain information caused more people, in what you're describing, over 100 million more Americans, subject themselves to experimental medicine that had known dangers, while, again, the facts of those dangers were withheld from the people on purpose. It is, seems like to me, Brian, in any other area, that would be considered a criminal act. I mean, for example, if a car manufacturer had an automobile, let's just say if it were Ford, you know, theoretically,
right?
If Ford had a truck and they knew that the truck would just blow up and kill some percent of people, and they withheld that information from the public and refused to recall, refused to acknowledge it, wouldn't Ford, I mean, I know you're not an attorney, but just logically speaking, couldn't that subject a corporation to criminal prosecution, not just civil violations?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, this was this type of misconduct should not go on. It should not continue. And, you know, you think of this in terms of like voluntary manslaughter. You know, that's the term that comes to mind in my not so legal mind. But, you know, that or, you know, this type of harm, this type of assault that was being foisted onto society when the officials, when Fauci himself clearly knew that this vaccine was going to cause massive amounts of damage, and yet it did not prevent transmission. It did not prevent infection. And so, you know, it leaves you scratching your head, like, how can they actually get away with this?
Yeah, perhaps COVID jabs are the Ford Pinto of the medical world. But to you, Natalie, let me shift gears here and change the question up. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. founded Children's Health Defense, and he has been, you know, an extraordinary pioneer in the operations of the organization. He's now running for president, obviously, as I've interviewed him, and I think most people know, and he's gaining in popularity quite rapidly. My question to you, and I apologize if this sounds like a harsh question, but how is Children's Health Defense functioning without him at the helm? I mean, his time away from CHD must be hurting in some way the ability of the organization to continue. Am I wrong in that? Or who's covering for him while he's campaigning?
We have incredible people in place. And over the last 13 years before Bobby stepped away, he led the way in such an incredible way that he instilled in everybody that's still working for the organization what our mission was, what we need to do, and how we need to do it. So thankfully, people have been put in place to continue that legacy, and we are honoring everything that he stood for. We are continuing that work, and we won't stop.
Well, that's really great to hear, because we don't want CHD to be interrupted in any way whatsoever. And as you just said, it isn't being interrupted. In fact, folks, if you want to help support Children's Health Defense, the California chapter again is at ca.childrenshealthdefense.org. Donations are available or accepted there. You can click the donate button up top. Or if you wish to donate to the national chapter, it's just childrenshealthdefense.org. And then I guess we'll all just, you know, kind of see what happens with the Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Presidential campaign, which is completely separate from Children's Health Defense operation. Yes. I want to be clear about that too. But CHD does its work regardless of what happens on the campaign trail, and that's good to know.
Can I just say one other thing?
Yes.
About the websites? For anyone that's interested in any of our events, obviously they can go to the website and donate, which we appreciate, because all of our funds go into fighting the different causes, whether it be fighting the mandates or different lawsuits that are going on around the country or specifically here in California. But people can also opt in to either volunteer or for our emails. And with the emails, you'll find out about all the incredible events that we're holding throughout the state, not just here in Southern California, but up in Northern California. We have speaker events where we have incredible guest speakers coming to help educate people on everything that's going on. Dr. Brian Hooker is going to be one of the people that we have speaking. We're also doing screenings of things like The Real Anthony Fauci, so people that maybe haven't read the book can come and watch it. And also, it gives people a chance to come together as a community and meet people from their own tribe, essentially. Because I know the last few years, a lot of people have felt very alone and isolated, because everybody's been told that if you question anything, you are crazy. And the reality is we're not. We're human and we're searching for answers. And to be around people that feel the same way is an incredible thing. And it also gives you resources. And we're also doing other community events in terms of preparation for what happens if there is some sort of natural disaster or an EMP strike and things like that. We recently, down here in Los Angeles, had an event with Steve Slepcevic, and he was telling us how to prepare so that we have everything we need, like satellite phones, how much water we need, food, all those sorts of things. And so that's what opting into the email will do for people.
Okay, outstanding. Right. So people can just click join on the website, and here you can put in your name and email address and join the email list.
Yes.
And help, and can also volunteer for the organization. So just want to encourage people to consider that. Now, we only have a few minutes left here, but what are the big issues that you're working on right now in California, Natalie?
Well, I'll throw this one to Brian. So Brian, go for it.
All right, Brian, you're up.
Sure. There are several different big issues that we're working on in California. There is a bill that CHD has fought hard against, and it's AB 659, and that was originally a mandate for the HPV vaccine for individuals age eighth grade and above, all the way through the state, California State University, University of California, and then the California Community Colleges. That was going to be a mandate. And there was such an outcry, and there was such a, I love advocates in California. They're so dedicated, and they just come out of the woodwork from everywhere. It's very, very easy to get a groundswell in Sacramento. And so that mandate was amended away from that bill, but the bill still has language that suggests that these entities can act as if that is a mandate. You know, it's coercion at its best. It is not legally a mandate, but they're basically hiding the fact that these individuals can opt out of this particular vaccination for school attendance from eighth grade and above, and then for higher education. And so we're still fighting that bill. It has passed through the assembly, and it's now moving on to the Senate. And our hope is that we can stop it dead in its tracks in the Senate. We're also fighting battles at the school board level and at the county level, including some legal battles regarding 5G technology and the placement of 5G technology. That's another area that is really near and dear to CHD's heart, is EMF and EMR. And so we're fighting that. You know, there is really no personal need for 5G technology. It seems like 5G really kind of ushers in the surveillance state, because your every move can be monitored through this type of bandwidth. But yet it is proven to be so unhealthy, and you know, people, especially with EMF sensitivities, are getting very, very sick. And yet, you know, the companies that use EMF and that are placing EMF almost have free reign over where they place these technologies and where they place these transmitters. And so it's, you know, we're fighting that, we're pushing back on that in a very, very concerted way.
Well, good for you. I'm really glad to hear that, because, you know, for years people were laughed at about the issue. If you talked about 5G or cell towers or EMFs of any kind, electro pollution. And as you know, Brian, the science has now been rather supportive of the notion that exposure to electromagnetic radiation, especially over a long period of time, is associated with numerous issues, including in some cases neurological issues and neurodevelopmental issues. So keep up your work there. We really appreciate you. Last question for today's interview. I'm going to direct this back to Natalie. And now, so you're a relative newcomer to California, as it seems like you've explained. A lot of people I see here in Texas have fled California, and they describe it as fleeing California because they've thrown in the towel, and they've decided it's too much authoritarianism, it's too insane, they have to leave. I'm happy that Children's Health Defense California is there on the ground fighting for the freedom and health and rights of the children who are there in California. But what's it like to be there as someone, you know, you came from Australia, to see what's happening in California, to see the level of authoritarianism being directed to children in terms of the medical choices? What, tell us, give us your perspective as a relative newcomer to the scene.
Well, and I have to be quite upfront here, I don't have children, but everyone in my circle does. So I am watching what's being done to their children, and it's horrifying. What does bring me hope is the fact that there are incredible people that chose to stay and fight for this beautiful state. And it is we've got the ocean, we've got these incredible forests, we have so much beauty here. And why should we be forced out of a place that we love to live? In terms of living here, I think, like humans do, we find workarounds. You find ways to work around what is being put in place. while you're fighting what is going on. And I understand people just saying, I can't do this, and needing to take their family to safety, but it gives me so much joy to think about all the people that stayed and are fighting this. And again, it's brought community together. People find each other and figure out homeschooling together. And I think things like that are making this state still be incredible.
Well, well said. And we're rooting for you from Texas. But we're also fighting in Texas for the same thing, you know, to make sure that children are protected. And it's in every state, right? This is a battle in every state. How many chapters are there of Children's Health Defense?
Right now, I believe there are about 20 state chapters of Children's Health Defense. And then we have many international chapters of Children's Health Defense. We have CHD Europe. We have CHD Africa. We have CHD Ireland. We have CHD Australia. And so we're rapidly expanding. Our goal is to have a chapter of CHD in every one of the 50 states, and then be able to have a worldwide presence as well.
Well, outstanding. I wish you the best in pursuing those goals. And I thank God that you exist, Brian and Natalie and your organization, and Robert F. Kennedy Jr. as well. So thank you for sharing your time with us today. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for having us.
Absolutely. It's great. Great to have you both here, and we'll do it again sometime. Thank you for your time and all your energy and what you're doing. So the website, folks, is ca.childrenshealthdefense.org for the California chapter, or you can just go to childrenshealthdefense.org for the national, and I guess the head of the international chapters, essentially, right there. So check it out and spread the word, share this video wherever you can. Remember that we cross post on Rumble and BitChute and other sites as well, like band.video. So share this everywhere you can, get the word out. And remember, we're rooting for humanity. We are all here on Team Humanity. It's not about politics, left and right division. It's about whether the human race survives. That's where I feel we are right now. So thank you for watching. I'm Mike Adams, the founder of Brighteon.com. Take care.